I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, what's up? We're back. Alternative Facts Podcast. My name's Chris Payne. I'm your host. I'm a staff writer at Billboard. Host this podcast each and every week. And this is the first episode of 2018. New year, new episode, new me. If you're not familiar with the show, we cover really all subgenres, all inner worlds of that rock and alternative universe. We talk rock, punk, metal, indie pop, experimental shit, kind of all over the place, but I think we keep it together. And I've been doing this podcast for a few years now at Billboard, excited to do it this coming year. And it's going to be every Thursday, weekly podcast, like last year. We took a little bit of time off for the holidays. Haven't been with this since maybe just before Christmas, but we're back. We're doing it every week now. This year, going to be focused on one big interview per episode, a deep interview, a long-form interview, hopefully an interesting interview. And last year, you know, similar to that, some of the episodes had different interviews in the same episode. We dipped into news more and chart conversations, some quick hits, some back and forth in the same episode. This year, one good interview per episode is pretty much how it's going to be, usually spotlighted on a musician. So this first one, I think, is a good one to kick off the year with because this musician drops a new album on the first day of 2018. It was a surprise release. Jeff Rosenstock, that's his name, put out an album called Post on New Year's Day. It's awesome. It sits well. Sits really nicely next to this previous album called Worry that he released in 2016. Jeff's not new, though. He's been at this for a while. He's 35 years old, been releasing music since the mid-90s. Recently, in this decade, the 2010s, he's been releasing music under his own name as Jeff Rosenstock, but he's been in plenty of bands before that, most recently one called Bomb the Music Industry, which maybe you're familiar with, probably you're familiar with if you're listening to this episode. But we went far back, we talked about this big spike in attention that he's been getting recently with his solo music, playing bigger festivals and doing fancy shit, what that's been like. What else did we talk about? We talked about how he's gotten to work with some of his heroes, musical punk heroes, and a production role. Aside from releasing his own music, he's a producer. Specifically, we talked about what it was like to produce Dan from Alkaline Trio, someone both of us have been into for a long time. We connected on that. One thing that's really interesting about Jeff, which I discovered in this episode, is how he's seen the internet. He's seen the music internet through from the beginning. He's been releasing music long enough that he's really seen every era of social media assisted music, from MP3.com and Pure Volume to MySpace, to now Bandcamp, which played a big role in releasing his new album. And, you know, what I really try to do with these episodes is have stuff for the heads, for the old fans, for people who want to really dig deep with these artists, but also have introductory stuff to give you a window into their world if you've really never heard of the music before. And I think there's a lot of inspirational stuff with Jeff that I think you'll find interesting, even if you've never heard of him before, so... Where this convo starts, we're talking about how he's scoring music for a new Adult Swim series called Craig of the Creek. We're going to jump right in chatting about that. Playing you in is USA, the first track from his new album. Enjoy.
Go! dumbfounded, downtrodden and dejected, crestfallen, grief-stricken and exhausted, trapped in my room while the house was burning to the motherfucking ground.
Yeah, I could talk about cartoon stuff.
Cool, yeah, because yeah. I mean, like, it's
not... I love talking about cartoon. Yeah. I've been fucking doing it, like, by myself in a tiny room, just like, So, yeah, I'm happy to talk about it.
Yeah, so, and yeah, tell the people about what you're at right now with the Cartoon Network project, about the show.
Okay, so there's a show called Craig of the Creek, which is coming in 2018. It's two of the writers from Steven Universe. From what I could tell, it's a handful of, like, the people who worked on Steven Universe and Adventure Time. Like, I know it's the same producer as Adventure Time. I know that because when I got an email from Kelly Cruz from the first, I was like, oh, shit, I know who that is. This is sick. And, yeah, I'm up to episode 6 now, and I just had to make sad music for a sad thing that happens. I didn't just, like, that's something that happens in this episode. I made something that, like, is, like, fucking sad. It like bummed me out, like, up until probably will continue to until I deliver the episode. Like, we're just like, oh man. So yeah, it's fun. So I'm just like, yeah, making tunes, trying to stretch outside of the stuff I normally do, and also putting a lot of ska in there because that's what they want, and that's fucking sick because I don't know, it's neat to like, it's neat to still be making ska music because it was super important to me when I was a kid until now, you know?
Yeah, and you know that they did their homework in reaching out to you.
Oh, yeah. Well, the dude who reached out to me, like Ben, like he saw Bond the Music Industry at a house show in 2007 or 2008 or something. So okay. That's kind of how he found out that I was a person doing stuff. And I guess he just kind of kept moving up at Cartoon Network because he's smart and good and funny and, he hit me up about doing music for the pilot, and I was just like I couldn't get to the phone fast enough to just be like, yes, yes, please, and I feel like every email I send to anybody there just always is like, thanks for letting me do this, because I'm just pumped to be doing it. It's really fun. It's kind of like, you know, there's not, it's really fun. It's something I've always wanted to do, and also, like, you know, I don't know if my body is going to be able to deal with fucking touring, like, when I'm 50 years old. And I still, like, I've had bands break up and I've stopped making music, and I still always end up coming back to music. So it's really fun to have something to do that is not, that's just kind of the music part of it, you know, and isn't like, so that doesn't like take over everything in my life. You know what I mean?
You're not about to go tour behind and do a press cycle behind this Cartoon Network music.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, like, yeah, and which, by the way, all that stuff is fun, but it's like, you know, there's only so much of anything that's kind of like constantly moving that you could do before either it drives you completely insane because you're just bouncing all over the place, or it becomes routine and then it's like, where's the fun in it? You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I feel like there's such a fine line, which I guess I'd include press stuff with that, but like in touring specifically of like, you know, holding on to like that chaos of like your first days in the van, and trying to keep having that, because if you don't have that, it's not like it seems cliche to say, like, if you don't have that, man, then why are you doing it? But like, if you don't have it, then I feel like you're missing like one of the best parts of touring, which is that like the uncertainty
sure.
of what's going to happen, you know? But then like so much uncertainty, you're just like, oh God, I have no idea what's happening. This is my life, you know?
Yeah. What you're talking about, it makes me think of, we talked a couple years back for a Billboard.com mm-hmm. thing about when you were playing all 5 boroughs in 24 hours,
yeah.
all 5 New York City boroughs.
Yeah.
That was probably a lot of the uncertainty of touring wrapped into one thing.
Yeah, but that was just one day. It was because I didn't book all of those shows. I don't know if I booked any of those shows. I might have gotten the Staten Island show, but like So that stuff was all like I think side one got a show and Greg, our agent, got a bunch of the shows and I got the Staten Island show. And like that was just something I've wanted to do my entire life. Like I've kind of just wanted to go to all five boroughs in one day just to do it. Like I've lived in New York for fucking 18 years pretty much. Like so like whenever I was in bands and stuff, it was just kind of like, I don't know. I always had that idea that it would be a fun thing and all my bands were kind of too had too many members to really pull it off. And also, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know how Bond the Music Industry would have done that. Maybe we could have, but, like, it was never a thing that really made too much sense. And then we had, like, three people in the band at the time for my band. It was, like, me, John, and Tim. And it was just like, yeah, three of us could get on a train and get on a ferry and, like, get on, you know, go around and do it all. Yeah, that was fun. That was, like... But that was also, like, that was so much energy that by the end of that, like, I kind of thought I was going to feel really drained. And I was, like, at the end of that show, but then, like, 30 minutes later, it was just, like, adrenaline, like, coursing through all of our veins. And just, like, sitting at the bar up the street from my house until, like, 4:30 in the morning drinking. Just like, fuck, I'm never going to bed. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It was just, like, five shows, you know?
I couldn't dream of that. I couldn't dream of that. TV stars don't care about who you are. TV stars don't care about who you are.
You had the first album of 2018.
I think so. I think I might have gotten beat. I think Sydney Gish, I think is her name. Whatever her name is, which I hope that's it because her record's really good. I can't believe I'm like blanking on her name right now. But I think she put out a record like 1201 or something. She wished me a happy album birthday release day co-release day thing on Twitter or whatever.
Like we're in this together.
And that Scallops Hotel that record came out New Year's Day too. I was surprised. I really thought I was gonna be the only one. I was like, of course I'm not the only one. Like people put out music all the damn time. You think I'm gonna be the only person who puts something out on New Year's Day? You know.
When did you start working on the process of getting the album ready?
What do you mean?
I guess like with wrapping things up as much as you could wrap them up from the previous album and writing, recording, getting all this planning together.
Well, I mean, I start writing like right away, basically, you know, like I try to not stop writing. That doesn't mean I sit down and go like, I gotta write today or anything like that. But just basically like if the mood strikes me or whatever, like I try and chase it. I don't really try and keep myself locked down to like album cycles or anything like that. Like I don't like once it starts, once like I have a bunch of songs that they start coming together and I start like feeling like what it seems like the vibe of the record will be, then I kind of start thinking about that stuff. So like, I don't know. I was writing a bunch of stuff, from like, so say Worry was probably demoed and finished in like February of whatever year that was, 2016, I think, 2017 maybe. And so from there on, 2016, yeah. So like from like our Europe tour in 2016, I started like trying to like be able to write better on the road. And a lot of these songs kind of came from their starts got happening there. And then like, you know, kind of collected stuff and I was really busy and on the road all the time. It was kind of hard to really process stuff. And then, you know, and then like the lead up to the election and then the election was just all like a lot to process. So, and I have two friends who have a really nice double wide trailer in the middle of the mountains, like secluded. And I had like a couple of weeks off of doing things and I was just like, hey, could I just go up there and like write and demo? And they're like, yeah. So that's kind of like where I feel like the whole vision, which I hate describing it like that, but whatever.
The artistic vision.
But it all like kind of really started making sense to me as like a thing, you know, as like a creature, basically. Mm-hmm. When I was up there, and I kind of like knew what pieces could turn into actual things and how to turn them into them, and just having like time away from all this stuff that was stressing everybody out, you know, and not just, or not even time away from that stuff, because I was still reading the news, but just time away from all the chatter about it, which kind of for me was like, I don't know, you either have like fucking like straight up racist thinking it's okay to be white supremacist on the internet, like thinking that being a white supremacist isn't a big deal, which is fucking crazy, and then you also have people who agree with you who are just like kind of annoying about it, and you're just like, I don't know where, how to even think about how I feel about any of this, because like big shock, everybody can't put this into 140 characters, you know what I mean? So like getting away from that and just being able to like process it on my own, while I was also like kind of processing all this stuff that I had written and trying to put it all together, like that's kind of when it started making sense, and like, you know, a majority of the record was kind of demoed and figured out up there. And then even when I left there, it was still just like kind of writing, like I think 9 out of 10 got written like right after I left there. Like it was just like, felt very creatively inspiring to have some space, which it's a shame, because I don't think we really live in a world that allows, that rewards giving yourself space anymore. Like if you take space or you take time to process anything, like you kind of you know, you miss out on the conversation, because the conversation moves so fast and there's so many important things, and it's just like, it's fucking crazy, man. The way to be a friend, if you were it was someday. The way to be a friend, if it wasn't worth it. If you didn't have something to do, but you just
With all your projects and bands going back, when was the first time that you think a website or some aspect of the internet was really key in what you were doing musically?
Well,
like maybe a precursor to, like, you did this new album with Bandcamp really heavily. Like,
well, Bond the Music Industry was like, just right out the gate, was just like an internet thing. You know, it was just me like writing songs in my bedroom and putting them up, like putting the songs up on MySpace, and then realizing like, okay, MySpace lets you have 4 songs up there. I want to make a record. I'm just going to put it online for free and have people download it. And like posting it on like the Connecticut ska message board, and like that was like the first thing, was when I started doing that and just like telling people about it. And I was surprised with how well people responded to it, because it seemed like a really new idea at the time. Even though I know that like Max Levine Ensemble and Defiance Ohio were both doing that, and I'm sure a handful of other bands were doing it too. But like it seemed like a really new thing, and that was just kind of like. So I would, like, post these things on MySpace, but then also, like, have, like, really long, like, anxious, like, journal entries that came along with it. Because, like, early Bond the Music Industry was really me just, like, fucking putting everything about myself out there, I think, because ASOB spent so... My band before it spent so long, like, working on this one record that, like, I felt like I, like, had... like I just had so much I wanted to make and wanted to say, and like by putting it out for free on the internet, it was like there was no limitations. I could just do whatever I wanted, and I could just put it out whenever I wanted. And that kind of made me excited about putting out the record the way that we did it now, because it's still on quote unquote records, which is the thing that I started with Bond the Music Industry, which is a free label or a donation if you want to label, but it's almost honestly hard to find the donation links on there, because I just didn't want to like shove that down anybody's throat. And like, we put it out like fucking like 3 weeks after it was done being recorded. Like, that's kind of the shit that I'm way into. I'm really into like the immediacy of stuff. I think that that's really fun. I think it's, you know, hard to do that in like traditional album cycles and stuff. So yeah, that like doing that like informed my entire life and everything that I've done
Yeah.
Since, you know?
Yeah, and luckily just when you were starting to be of the age to like start being in bands and putting stuff out, that was around the time when those sites were just starting to pop up.
Yeah, yeah. It was really like early-ish days of MySpace. I remember Friendster starting and just being like, whoa, this is insane. I could like stay in touch with all these people I met on tour. Wow, this is amazing. I love Friendster. I miss Friendster. Mm-hmm. Friendster was the shit.
Did you do Pure Volume?
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah, I did. I did mp3.com, dude. I did all those things. But yeah, Pure Volume. We had a Pure Volume. I feel like we put like an unreleased song or two unreleased, like my band ASOB, like put up two unreleased songs in Pure Volume and didn't tell anybody about them. Like we're just like put it out there. It's like if you find us, you'll find that there are songs you haven't heard by us up on here. Be like, oh, what the hell, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting because you must, from your vantage point, starting with ASOB, you've sort of seen like this beginning of like independent music distribution on the internet start, and you've followed and done your music across really all of it until now.
Yeah, but it wasn't like an intentional thing. I didn't really feel like I was like riding any waves. It was just kind of like
what was there.
Yeah, it was like what's the like, oh, there's like a, it's, you could record your music on a laptop and it's like you could give it to anybody who wants to hear it for free. To me, that's just kind of like, I don't know, I got into punk because, like, just straight up, like, you know, capitalism and commercialism, like, kind of, like, drives me nuts. It makes me feel anxious and stressed, and I don't like it. And I got into punk because it seemed like it was against that. And it was really exciting to find an avenue that seemed like, okay, so I could just, like, have a job, and then I could also do this and give it all out for free. And it doesn't matter if we tour or not because it's just all there. And, like, it doesn't have to become a whole, like, machine, you know, which is really exciting. And I think that still is really exciting, you know. Like, the fact that, like, I can not, if I want to, I could just never tour again and, like, you know, indulge my fucking hermit self and, like, hide away somewhere in the mountains.
And just put,
like,
out band put out
music
albums.
If I want to. Like, the fact that that's there, like, makes me feel more comfortable being a musician, because you know what I mean.
Yeah,
I know that you don't have to be a part of the thing if you don't want to.
Yeah, you don't have to be a part of the system. You're not bound to that of like touring and showing your face out in public and.
Yeah, which is like I like touring. Obviously.
I think that's very clear.
I like playing shows. Like we tour all the time, but like, you know, I think any, I don't know if it's true, but for me, I bet there's definitely a part of me that is like, you know, fucking doesn't want to see anybody sometimes, you know.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
How is it you first found punk and had that discovery?
I found out about like punk music from like Green Day and The Offspring,
okay.
And then reading like their thank yous and seeing what bands were on Epitaph and seeing what bands were on Lookout and kind of like following that. And then it's like a handful of things, you know, like I had like one or two friends who showed me cool stuff, but I was never like, I wasn't friends with like the punks in my high school. Like, I wanted to be friends with them, but they were like way cooler than me, and they could all skate, and I was like a chubby kid who was bad at everything. So it was just like kind of tough, which is weird because like I felt like punk was the music for me as a chubby kid who was bad at everything. You know, I feel like that's what punk is fucking for. And I think like finding, let's take to Operation Ivy, like in my friend's basement, while like I think they were upstairs like drinking or doing something, just like not something weird, but like either doing drugs or drinking or something that like I just was not me, mm-hmm. you know, at the time especially. And I like went to his basement and saw an Operation Ivy CD. I was like, oh yeah, that's the band that Green Day covered. And I remember just hearing their version of Knowledge and be like, whoa, this sounds kind of bad. And then like, but still listening to all of it and then just be like, wait, this is the best thing I've heard in my entire life, and I've never heard anything like this. And like reading the lyrics and just being like, oh my God, like this is how I feel. And then just stealing that CD from my friend and listening to it nonstop, like forever and ever and ever and ever. You know, I think that's kind of like that, and a combination of that and like finding out that there were, that even if I couldn't go see Biohazard, there were bands in Long Island that sounded like Biohazard that I could go see. And that's how I found out about, like, you know, like underground scenes and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And then like getting into ska and like finding out that like you and your friends can like book shows and like you can meet people from, because Long Island is like, every town is like really small and really, but it's all like kind of one big town. Like every town is right up against each other. There's not like space in the highway between them or anything. Like everything is just like there, smack, 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 smack. So like, you know, like I became friends with like some people from Freeport, which is the town next to me. And then like those friends in Freeport, my friend Joe had a friend named Chris who went to like the Catholic school. And then he like had buddies from the North Shore, and like, it's kind of like you realize like you could all meet each other through this other thing. So it was weird. I think like I originally thought like, yeah, I got to find people in my high school who like punk. But it turned out that the people in my high school like punked, like that was I don't know. We weren't like enemies or anything like that, but we didn't like fucking hang or anything, you know, like I feel like I had to find like more weirdo anxious kids than I had to find punks, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's funny how even outsider music can seem like a cool thing, and in and of that can make you feel like you're not cool enough to like enter into it.
Yeah, it seems like it's very much weirdo outsider music, yeah.
And then you realize like, wait, no, it's meant for outsiders. Like, no, I have a place in this.
Yeah, it's this like weird... this weird combo of like, it's music made by weirdos for other weirdos, but then that makes it cool. So then you have like cool record store guy telling you that you're a dipshit because you like Big Wig and 30 Foot Fall, which are these just like random punk bands that I like growing up. They're like, oh, you don't know anything because you don't like the Buzzcocks. And I'm just like, I don't know, the Buzzcocks sound funny to me, which and like, but now like having like kind of digested a lot of punk, I understand why they were saying that. Buzzcocks are one of the best fucking bands ever, but like, I don't know, people really don't let you go at your own pace with weirdo outsider music, and they really shame you for liking shit that's not cool. Like, I used to really like Korn, and like when somebody like told me that Korn and Marilyn Manson weren't punk bands, like it just like crushed my world. I was like, wait, this all is the same thing, you know?
Yeah. What was the record store? Was there a big one for you?
Probably Slip Disc and Valley Stream was a big record store for me. And then as I got older, there was Empire Discs, which was like by Roosevelt Field Mall in Long Island, and they would have shows there and stuff. Mm-hmm. And there was a tower that like was like a big awesome thing, and I feel like, and that was also like by like the shopping center or the mall or whatever. So like when my parents would have to go up there, like I'd go to Tower Records or I'd go to Nobody Beats the Wiz, and like, you know, I was like, anything in the Billboard top 200. It was funny that we're doing a fucking Billboard podcast, but this is what I remember. This is great synergy or something. But like anything in the Billboard top 200, Nobody Beats the Wiz was $11.99, and then every other CD was $12.99. So it was like cheap enough that like I could like recycle cans and stuff and like get, you know, get Dookie. And then like eventually when I got old enough, I'd take the bus to Slipdisc in Valley Stream and just like look at everything, like look at 7 inches and vinyl, and 7 inch vinyl and regular vinyl were just so fucking cheap then that it was just like,
yeah,
my parents had a record player and I was like, yeah, I'll get this like no redeeming social value 7 inch. It costs like $4. I got $4, you know?
Yeah. When we were talking about that string of internet ways of putting up music since the very beginning, I was thinking, like, also on the flip side, you watching over the years the ebb and flow of interest in vinyl, that must be kind of a trip.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It just makes me think about Bitcoin. And now I've like lost like $12,000 in the last month because I got in really early and then it was really high and I was like, oh shit, I'm just gonna ride this out, and now it seems like it's going down, which is fucking stressful. But yeah, knocking on wood, hopefully that doesn't happen. I was just so excited to have a record on vinyl. It's weird because Bomb the Music Industry, like my whole plan from the beginning was just like, no merchandise ever. No records, no shirts, no nothing. We'll tour and we'll ask for gas money and we'll ask for food and then we'll go home and we'll go back to work, you know? And then my buddy Flood offered to put out one of our records on vinyl and then I was just like, oh shit, I didn't even know that was a possibility. That's so cool. All right, I guess we'll make vinyl. And then it was kind of a slippery slope. But yeah, I think it's cool that like you can make a vinyl record now. I think it's cool that like if you're a small band, you could like, there's ways that you could get enough together and get like, you know, discounts at United and like, you know, get your like 500 records on mixed vinyl, and it costs like $1,200 or something, but like you could figure it out and like make your own jackets and shit. I think that's cool. Like Beats CDRs for sure, because they used to like flake off and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. And like even pressing CDs, I feel like wherever like my band pressed CDs when I was a kid was not a place that pressed CDs for anybody professional, because it was just like the jankiest job in the fucking world, you know.
Yeah, for getting post ready for New Year's spur of the moment, or somewhat spur of the moment, that must be sort of a challenge in getting the vinyl ready.
Yeah, well, the vinyl's not out. Vinyl's okay. Going to be out in the the vinyl's definitely going to be out in the middle of March. I'm hoping we get some copies for like our February tour. But that was like, that was a thing that I was like, whatever, vinyl won't be out. I want the record to be out on New Year's Day. And the only time we can record it is December. So that's just how it's going to be, you know? Mm-hmm. Like the idea of just having it out for free on New Year's Day was the most important thing. And I feel like, you know, it seems like nobody's stressing too hard about waiting for the vinyl. Like I think about the last Kendrick Lamar record a lot and like how that was rolled out. And I thought that was really cool. And I thought it was a really good record. And I thought it was cool that like he seemed to make a lot of really bold, non-traditional choices with a record that was so fucking good that it made me less afraid to try doing stuff that was, you know, kind of,
yeah,
weird, you know?
That damn,
like, damn didn't
out
suffer
that,
because
that
the vinyl
pack.
Wasn't out. Frank Ocean isn't suffering because he puts out like 30 copies of Blonde out once every 5 years, you know. He's still doing fine. So, you know, seeing people like that do things the way that they do things is definitely like inspiring to be like, okay, yeah, you could fucking do anything, you know?
Yeah. After doing the previous album with Psy One Dummy, what brought you to Polyvinyl for this album?
They were interested, and I'm a big fan of Polyvinyl. Like, it's just that simple. It was like, I was just going to put it out on my own and just put it out for free on the internet and then be like, okay, vinyl will be later, be available eventually. Like, I knew I had a bunch of work to do with Craig of the Creek. So I was like, to me, it was either put this record out right away when it's done, put it out for free, like whatever happens, happens. But I got work to do anyway. So if we don't do like the traditional like touring press stuff, like it's fine. It'll be like, I kind of in my mind was imagining it would be kind of like Mutations by Beck, which is just like this record that I don't feel like he did a lot of stuff for. And it was just like there in the world, you know? And like Midnight Vultures is like huge, all kinds of tons of shit. Odelay was huge, all kinds of tons of shit. But Mutations was just like in the middle of that. And that was kind of a little bit of another like thing that was like, okay, yeah, maybe do something like that, you know? And then like it turned out Polyvinyl was interested. And I was just like, well, I would be a fucking idiot to not try and do this, not like at the very least explain to them like what the plan is for this record and see if they'd be down to do the vinyl. And so I did, and they were like super into it and didn't get scared off by it at all, which was a shock to me. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you've been doing this so long, but it seems like so many new fans like got excited and started taking notice with Worry. Like, from your vantage point, is that kind of crazy?
Yeah, it's completely crazy. I don't know how to deal with it. Like, it's either like it's mostly like days where it's just like it seems like the best thing in the world. And when we're on tour, it's just like, holy shit, this is awesome. But also, like, I'm a person who does not. It's weird because I think I function well under pressure, but I don't like putting that pressure on myself, and especially I don't like doing it with music. Like, music is a fucking sacred thing to me. Like, it's the thing that, like, gets, like, my bad bullshit out of my brain so I could be a human to other people in the outside world. And it truly is that, and which is why, like, I do stuff for free, because like I'm just doing it because I have to do it. I'm not doing it because I'm trying to be like a rock star or any shit like that. So when like more attention comes to me, sometimes it feels scary, you know, and I feel bad that it feels scary, because it's like all the things that I've wanted to do, you know, since I was young. It's just like, you know, like having to, I don't know. I just don't want to fuck it up. I don't want to say the wrong thing. I don't want to be bad. I don't want to, like, I just, like, I don't want to let anybody down, you know? Because for me, like, bands that I liked growing up, and I've noticed that, like, the people who go to shows, the people I've spoken to are, like, really into it. It means a lot to them, which is sick because it means a lot to me, too. But at the same time, like, I don't know if I have the fucking confidence to be a person who's worth somebody believing a lot in, you know? And that's something I really think I need. I'm like trying very hard to overcome, because that's stupid. Like, that's just like my like depression and my bullshit like playing tricks on what my reality is, which is that I worked hard at something for 15 years and now good things are happening. Like, I need to like start to become, I'm trying my best to like be able to look at the good and not get so, you know, not feel guilty every hour of the day because I have to like look after my voice and I can't like talk to people at every show, which is just such a stupid thing to like feel bad about, you know?
Yeah. Like, from my vantage point, seeing your success over the like past 2 years or so,
it's funny. And also it's funny because like we're talking about like a good thing happening, you know? And like, it's annoying that my brain turns it into that shit. But anyway, sorry to interrupt.
It seems like, from my vantage point, it's more like websites writing about you or magazines writing about you or just like seeing more people on Twitter getting excited about your music. Yeah. From your vantage point, what are you seeing that's like, wow, I wasn't seeing this 8 years ago?
Well, it's that for sure. It's people being so excited. It's like, I think for me, talking through it now, I think that one of the things that I'm trying to come to terms with is that there's a point where it becomes too much to have like one-on-one communication with people who are excited, which is never a spot I ever thought I'd be in, but it's just kind of like, and it sucks. Like, I don't want to be that person because it's so like, I see it and I'm just fucking thrilled. I can't believe like I don't know. Every time I'm done with a record, I think it's a good record. That's why I put it out. And it's weird that like with Worry, like some like it struck a different chord, and it was exciting because I felt like I took chances, especially lyrically on that record. Like, I went to places that I don't usually go to. Like, I was trying very hard to write outside of my comfort zone, and the feeling that was met with like with positivity and with like good stuff was like a great, it's a great feeling. Like it makes me feel less alone. You know what I mean? So it's awesome. It's cool. I don't know what's going to fucking happen. I just kind of expect it to all come crashing down eventually. So maybe I don't get like too worked up over it. I just try to get worked up over the shit I could control, which is like warm up your stupid voice, idiot, and try and play well and don't drink before the show because you'll play better. Have a beer after the show. It's fine. You know what I mean? Like, I just kind of focus and try to play good and try to write songs that I think are interesting, you know?
Yeah, it's really that simple. Like, recently, have you found yourself in maybe, like, just places or social situations because of your music recently where, like, wow, what am I doing here? Like, this is weird.
Like, in a negative way?
In a good way. Just maybe, like, I'm thinking about, like, playing Pitchfork.
Yeah, right? For
like
sure.
Playing that festival.
Well,
that set.
You know what? Like, straight up, I went into Pitchfork with like a significant amount of baggage, I guess. I don't think that's the right word, but like, I had my fucking preconceived notions of what a festival like that would be like, especially what Pitchfork Fest would be like, because like, you know, like, first of all, I cannot believe that like we're getting like good reviews on Pitchfork. That's something I never saw coming in my life. Because I remember them reviewing Maybe I'll Catch Fire and like talking shit about Asian Man and being like, fucking Asian Man's my favorite thing in the world, you know? So I think I went in there with a little bit of a chip on my shoulder, and then like immediately, like everybody there was so nice, and it was just like, wait, everybody here just likes music and has strong opinions about music, and I like music and I have strong opinions about music. So maybe like this shit's on me, you know what I mean? It wasn't a weird situation. It was great, dude. I was getting free food all fucking weekend, getting free food, free alcohol, like getting to watch Danny Brown for free, I've never seen Danny Brown, like getting to see fucking Danny Brown, like getting to see Angel Olsen, getting to see Mitski for the first time, like getting to watch like Vince Staples was fucking sick, getting to see Solange, LCD Sound System, like bands I just straight up can't afford to go see or don't have time to go see, or like I always miss, like, you know, I don't know, Solange doesn't seem like she plays that much. Seems like she just plays like festivals, and I don't fucking go to festivals. I can't afford that shit. Like, so it was really cool to like be there and then like, you know, to kind of feel accepted there, to not have people, to have like, when we were like setting up on stage, we were like first band in the morning, and like we saw people actually out there to watch us, because we just assumed we were going to play to like 100 people and like everyone would be at the side stage, like wait, like either just watching Vagabond or waiting for the next person to like do their thing. To be met with a positive reaction, it was just like really surprising or really cool, and showed me that I should stop being I shouldn't fucking cast judgment on people who just like music. You know what I mean?
You don't want to be like those two cool punks in high school.
Yeah, exactly. And it's hard to not become those two cool punks in high school, because like fucking DIY punk is super cool. House shows are super cool. And you're definitely like in that this world that like is the fucking best in a lot of ways. Like the best bands are playing the best shows at basements and nobody knows about it. And it's just kind of like I super miss being in that world. It's just not practical for us anymore. Like if we played a basement now, it'd just be like, you know, I'm sure on the way back down we'll play basements again. But like, yeah, I think that like I came up in that world. I had such a chip on my shoulder. I always have such a ska chip on my shoulder for anybody
that's
who talks
extra,
shit about ska.
That's an extra big chip.
Which like everybody talks shit about ska. So I just always got a chip on my shoulder about everything. It's just kind of like, got to lose that shit because that shit's on you. You know what I mean? So it's, I don't know. It's nice. I hope, I don't know. It's like, again, completely baffling to me that like our records have gotten good reviews on Pitchfork. Like, it's just like, it's cool. Like, you see stuff open up in a way that it hasn't. So it's like, it's neat. It's something I really appreciate a lot, you know?
But you are going to have to take them to task for those Alkaline Trio reviews.
They're not up anymore. Look at
scrubbed. Are those scrubbed?
I think they're scrubbed. I don't know if the Travis Morrison review's scrubbed. the famous Travis Morrison Zero, and I was like a big Dismemberment Plan fan, and like, yeah, I was bummed about that review, but whatever. I was still reading Pitchfork, so like, whatever. Fucking throwing stones from a glass house, you know?
Yeah.
But like, I don't think that Alkaline Trio one's up, because I always want to like find it and like send it to Mike Park, because we just both fuck with each other all the time, and I feel like that would be really good ammo to fuck with Mike. So yeah, I want to find it and send it to him.
Yeah, because they're
although I don't know, it was mean. It might actually hurt. It might be too far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm thinking with like Asian Man, with like even the members of Alkaline Trio, there's some ska roots.
Oh, in there. Yeah.
Like Dan Danzel.
Dan Andriano certainly has a checkered past. He can slapstick, dude. And Skiba's got an Operation Ivy tattoo. So, you know. And Derek Grant was in the Suicide Machines. Derek Grant played drums on the best ska punk drumming record of all time, Destruction by Definition. Like, one of the best ska punk records of, like, that era. Mm-hmm. And, like, is the best drumming ever of that genre, I feel like, you know? And that was Derek Grant from Alkaline Trio.
Wonder what I was that made you this way. Maybe as a kid your toys are taken away. Some toys with you to this day. You better break your wheel.
Yeah, working with Dan was wild. That was like before We Cool came out. So like, I had like no clout at all. I had no business doing that shit except whatever my abilities are, however good or bad they might be. But me and Dan really hit it off. I like him a lot. I miss playing music with him.
Yeah, what was it like going into work with someone like that who you like thought was so awesome and you know looked
up
to?
Turns out to be a piece of shit, so it doesn't matter. No, I mean, you know, Mike Park puts people in situations where that tension is just cut. Like, we were both sleeping in the basement of Asian Man Records, and Mike, like, got Dan a futon and found a futon for free for me that had a hole in it. And, like, the first thing that we did was just, like, yo, it's freezing down here. We got to go to Fry's and buy a space heater. And so, like, the first thing we're doing is, like, shopping for a space heater together. Just, like, I don't know. I mean... I know that people are people and musicians are just people, and I know that if I'm working with somebody, like, he's definitely the most high profile person that I think I've worked with. Like, I guess Smith Street Band in Australia too, but like, we've been buddies for a long time, so it wasn't really the same thing. Like, Dan was somebody's music that like informed me. So it's just like, I don't know. I could have either gone into it and been a super fan and kind of been annoying, but I know that like, I know that Dan wouldn't want that. And I don't, and I want, my job is to help Dan make the best record he wants to make. So I was just like, all right, I can't do that shit, you know? And I have like my first phone call with him and like shook off the butterflies. Just like, all right, cool. And then like, you know, he's sending demos and I'm sending structural ideas and just like, you know, that's the thing. Like, for me, like, producing that record, like, it came down to, like, the first practice. He's like, I got this riff, and I got this other thing, but I don't know what to do. And I was like, all right, yo, check it out. Like, think about it for, like, 5 seconds. Be like, check out this fucking structure. This be tight. You know what I mean? And he was just like, whoa, how do you just do that? I was like, I don't know. It's because I'm a psycho, and this is the only thing I think about all the time. So it's like asking somebody who studied calculus forever, like, how to solve a math equation. Like, not like that, but it's just kind of like, I don't know, because it's a fucking, because you're writing a good song, and if it's just a matter of, like, how to make that song feel represented properly with the dynamics of it, like, yeah, dude, I got you, you know? So, yeah, it was kind of like we were just immediately working well together, and he's such a fucking goofball, he's such a funny person, and he's really nice and didn't ever make me feel... Like, that first day when I was talking about that, he was like, yo, dude, you're, like, actually a producer. Like, I was just kind of like, that was just a nice thing to hear, because up until that point, it was like, I don't, like, I've done stuff, but I just don't, like, I don't know. I don't really even know. Like, I mixed a record where somebody made me feel like I didn't belong there. And it fucking sucked. It really shook my confidence a lot. It really made me feel like, and I don't think that person meant to make me feel like I didn't belong there. Like, they're a nice person, you know what I mean? Just trying to do the job, which at the end of the day, you're trying to like capture a fucking like fairy with like a with like by blowing a bubble and catching the fairy in the bubble and making like this perfect thing, and that's nearly impossible, you know. So there's a lot of like push and pull that goes on with every record, and you're never fully satisfied with anything. But like, there is an instance that like I like thought I was doing a good job, and then I got kind of put in my place a little bit, and it shook me and made me feel like, oh, maybe like this isn't the thing I should be doing, because I don't want to act the way that I'm supposed to act as a producer. Like, I just kind of want to try and make the songs good, and I'm gonna like fight for my ideas and tone, because I think records sound terrible now, and I want the records I make to not sound terrible. Dan kind of gave me that confidence back to be able to do that, which is really nice. And I don't know if I've ever told him that. I was probably like, oh, that's nice of you to say. He's like, yeah, whatever, bro, you know?
Well, we're going to get this podcast up. We're going to tweet it, Dan.
Jesus. Yeah. Don't tweet it, Dan. Don't tweet it, Pitchfork.
Oh, we got a long line of pull quotes. Pull quotes, timestamps, tweets.
Perfect, yeah.
Pitchfork, individual writers for Pitchfork in 1998.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, find them. I'm sorry already in advance. Obviously, like, I don't care. Yeah.
It was like, what was it? 8.2 was the last one.
Yeah.
When it was 8.0 before, you're going up.
Yeah, I'm going to get a, if the next one's good, 8.4. Or what if it's an 8.1? It's probably going to be like a 4. It's like, I feel like history shows like the next one's going to be the pile of shit. So getting ready to make a big steam.
Got to have positive thinking.
Big steaming pile of shit for the next one. No, the next one's like already, I'm already like 7 songs in on the next
one. Yeah, I'm sure you are. Yeah.
It's just like, I don't, like I was saying before, like I'm not fucking about trying to like follow the thing. I'm just trying to like, when the songs come, try and chase them. And when you got a bunch of them that seem to make sense together, fucking figure out how the rest, put in the rest of the puzzle pieces. Get some, I don't know, get some color and paint that thing, you know?
Yeah. So it sounds like, already in the thick of things going forward. We talked about a lot. You know, we talked about the Cartoon Network stuff, about touring a little bit. Anything else like coming up for you this year you want to shout out? Or
no,
just stuff you're excited about?
Antarctica Vespucci. We're going to finish a record soon. And that's going to be out in the summer. I guess if anybody's listening to this and considering seeing us on tour, and then you're like, no, I'll see him next time. Like, yo, my schedule's crazy. Fucking see us this time. I don't know, like, I don't know how long I'm going to be able to keep this up of, like, touring while I'm scoring a fucking television show. It was a very brazen thing to take on. Yeah. So, I don't know. Check us out. Hopefully, we'll be good live. And then if we're not, you know, my bad. You don't have to see us again. It's cool.
So yeah, there it is. That was a little Suicide Machines playing us out of that episode. I had a blast talking with Jeff. I hope you enjoyed that one. Jeff, I hope you enjoyed it yourself. Post, the new album is out now on Polyvinyl Records. Jeff is going on tour. You don't need me to tell you where to find all that stuff, I'm sure. For this show, old episodes, we've been doing this for a while, a couple years now. There's a lot of old episodes I think you'd be really into if you came here for the Jeff Rosenstock interview. Last year, let's see, I think you would be into our interview with Lauren D. from Warriors, our interview with Charlie Bliss, Front Bottoms episode, Tom Mullen from Washed Up Emo. So how do you find those? Well, search for hashtag Alternative Facts, that's the name of the podcast. Search Alternative Facts in iTunes, podcast app on your phone, however it is that you find podcasts out in the world. And while you're there, subscribe to the show, get it automatically every week without having to go download it each individual time. And any kind of feedback is super helpful. I put a lot into this show. This is probably my favorite thing that I do at Billboard. I love my job here. There's a lot of things that I find very exciting, but this podcast is probably number one. So really, I appreciate all feedback from you guys. Star ratings on iTunes, super helpful. And any and all feedback that you write in, or more directly, you can always hit me up on Twitter. C-Pain on a plane is the handle. Chris Payne, C-H-R-I-S-P-A-Y-N-E, if you just want to search the name. I'm always just throwing out little teasers on what I'm doing with the show, little hints, stuff that's going on in my world, and it's a good way to keep up with me if you want to get me feedback that way. However, it's all super appreciated, so what else? That's about all I have for you guys. Coming up, new episodes for this season. I've already recorded a couple. I'll say what they are. I interviewed Tonight Alive. That'll be next week's episode. And just earlier this week, interviewed Chris Carrabba, Dashboard Confessional. Talked about a lot of stuff with him. That'll be another future episode. So until next time, I'll catch you next Thursday. Peace out.